All right, welcome to the next episode of our Friday Forum Pixar Rewatch. This is episode 9, and today we are talking about the 9th Pixar movie, which is WALL-E. With us today, as always, is Jimmy Anthony, and he is going to be John, the passenger on the ship.
Hey, look, it's WALL-E. Hey, WALL-E. Hey, your buddy John. Hey, it's WALL-E.
I should be able to do a better Ratzenberger at this point.
We also have with us Byron Anthony. He's going to be the autopilot.
No.
No. We have Cynthia Anthony. She is going to be the ship's computer voice.
Unchanged. Dancing. Soil. The element of the planet Earth.
That's great.
All right. Next up, we've got Grace Anthony. She's going to be WALL-E.
Eva!
Perfect.
Daisy hated that sound. So mad.
We have Brian Baldwin. He's going to be Eve.
WALL-E.
WALL-E! Yeah.
Jacob Shear is here. He's going to be the captain of the ship.
We can move to Earth and you can make pizza plants.
Nice. Daniel McCarley here is going to be Shelby Forthright. That's the president of By and Large.
All right, By and Large shoppers. It's time to leave planet Earth now. I know that this is getting polluted. The Axiom and the robots are going to take care of everything. So, we're going to leave on the Axiom, guys. All right. Rest in peace, Fred Willard.
All right.
And I am your host, Kelly Anthony, and I'm going to be Mary, the other passenger on the ship. I didn't know we had a pool. That's pretty much the only line I know.
The only one I can think of too, except for just like her reaction, but it's not a line when she snaps out of
like,
it. Just like,
look, it's WALL-E. It's what's his name or something when she sees him in the sky. All right. Yeah. I see. Those are like the only real characters. I was like, someone could maybe be the cockroach, but then they just have to like chirp.
What about Mole?
Oh, the little.
I wanted to use a speaker that said, time for lunch in a cup.
That's the ship's computer, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. Well, again, today we're talking about WALL-E, and we're going to start off by talking about our memories of the film. So, Jimmy, start us off. Memories of WALL-E.
I actually do remember seeing this in the theater. It's the first one that I remember, like, going to see it, being curious what it would be about, and walking out of the theater being like, that was so amazing. I was significantly older maybe than the last one I would have seen in the theater, which is maybe Toy Story 2 or something like that. I don't even know. But we can go back to the episode and listen to it. Check that, what I said then. But I remember seeing the theater. I remember being curious what it was going to be about or how it was going to play out. And being just so pleasantly surprised. I sort of fell off with Pixar for a couple movies in a row. Didn't see Cars at all. Didn't see Ratatouille at all. And then I was like, oh, I guess I'll go see this one. I don't know what got me into it or why I went to go see it. The trailer must have been good. I should have watched that, actually. I don't recall what the trailer really was like. But, I like robots in general, so that was kind of a thing. But, man, yeah, I remember walking out of the theater. Oh, I remember being in the theater and thinking, like, oh, shit, there's, like, no dialogue. This is so dope. Like, and just liking it and loving it. And then I also was in a newly formed relationship at the time and was very in that, like, bubbly puppy love, like, the initial stages of that. So the romantic aspect was really, like, relatable to me and felt very endearing, like their whole relationship, and I fell in love with WALL-E as a character. So yeah, just very positive memories from the first viewing, and then it's just one that I've liked to put on recently. watched it a couple times, but prior to Disney Plus, I never had it on like DVD or Blu-ray. So I never really got to watch it as much as I wanted. So it's one that I love, and it thankfully hasn't really been spoiled yet. I haven't watched it to death. Maybe like I have with like Toy Story or some of those other ones. I just watched a ton on VHS. It still has like a freshness to me. So yeah, those are my memories.
Great. All right. Byron, memories.
I fucking loved this movie the first time I saw it. I saw it in theaters, and it was like the first Pixar movie I saw it as an adult. You know, we talk a lot about how now we watch these movies as adults and we can appreciate the humor that we didn't appreciate before. But I was in college when I saw this movie. And even now when I watch it, I think it is one of, if not my favorite Pixar movies. And it is definitely one of my favorite movies, like in general. I love, love, love this movie. Everything about it, we'll talk about it later. But the message to me was really timely when I first saw it. The environmental message that it had, it was sort of post Inconvenient Truth when going green was a really big thing. But I still feel like this movie has a really great way of making that message that isn't, I don't know, it's, you know, it's engaging and it makes you think, but it doesn't, it blames you in the right ways without making you feel like you can't do anything about it, you know? So that message always resonated with me. I'm forever in love with the characters. The story itself is amazing. So my first impression is my still impression, which is I fucking love this movie.
Awesome. That's it. Podcast over. No. Great. Cynthia, you are up next. Memories.
I know that I saw WALL-E in the movie theaters not long after it came out. I mean, it was still a pretty hot ticket. And I really liked it. Although I think I enjoyed it more rewatching it. I didn't really remember the ending. And so that was nice to see the end of the movie again. And also just to be taken away, going for the ride of the story. And that brought back memories of just enjoying that the first time I saw it. I can't even remember which theater. I think my husband was with me, though. We just must have just said, let's go to the movies.
I'm sorry. I have to chime in here, Mom. You actually saw that movie with Bayo, who is a very dear friend of mine for all of our listeners. So Bayo, my dear friend, will always say, I saw that movie with your mom. And I'm just like,
Was he in Paso with us?
He was. He was visiting. Okay. So there for anyone who doesn't have context,
I'm so glad you added to that memory. Yeah. Oh, I even love it more now. We had that good experience together.
All right. Grace, memories of WALL-E.
I don't have a memory of being in the theater, but I know that I saw it in theaters as well. And I was in my very first like serious relationship during this time too. So just like the way that they communicate with each other, saying each other's names and the sounds just really dig their little claws into my heart. Like, it's just so sweet that I don't know what to do with it. It's so endearing and so like moving, I think, because it's so simple. So that feeling I remember being very real when I saw it the first time and has always sort of colored my memories of it. I love it. It's almost uncomfortable how sweet and how cute and how dear it is. But that's been like that from day one for me too.
Yes, I definitely agree with that sentiment. All right, Brian. Memories of WALL-E.
I remember I was a senior in high school, and yeah, kind of like what Byron said, it was, I really remember it as the first movie that was like, oh, this is like Disney going to be making a statement about the environment. Like, like how weird, you know, because it was before, it was as climate change and all of that stuff was really moving back into the spotlight and becoming like more of a huge, huge issue. I remember that I did see it in theaters, but I think the thing I mostly remember about it is like the stuff about climate change and just kind of, I don't know, what keeps coming to mind is how it's just still the quintessential example to me of like Disney visiting very mature and like adult theme, you know, and several adult themes, and like simplifying it enough to where it is easy for a child to understand, you know.
All right. Great. Jacob, memories.
Not a lot of memories. I didn't see it in theaters. I think the first time I saw it was at some gathering, but I didn't really pay attention because it was like more about the hangout. And then probably actually seriously watched it like 3 years ago. And yeah, not a lot of strong memories. It was a good movie, and I wasn't wowed by it as much as I was 2 days ago.
All right, Daniel, memories of WALL-E.
So I didn't see this one in a theater for whatever reason. This is actually, I think, the first Pixar movie I didn't see in a theater. I watched it on my laptop a few months later, which is not a bad way to see this movie. But I had like, but other people I knew had seen it and loved it. And I had like, and I don't know why I didn't see it, but by the time I did, I had like really high expectations for it. Cause I knew it was sci-fi. It was going to have like the environmental theme and stuff. So, you know, I liked it, but this point, I don't know. It was like, it had the potential to be my favorite Pixar movie, but was it going to be? And it was just like, wow, Pixar made another good one. And like, this is getting, this filmography is getting too big to organize now, because too many of these movies are good. But it was, yeah, it's a good movie. We'll get into the details of how in a second.
So I definitely remember seeing this in theaters, and similar to a couple other people, this was when I was like first dating somebody, and we went to see it together at Birch Street in Brea. And I remember knowing it was about like a robot and like the environment, but like that was it. And I remember in the theater being blown away by the fact that the first 30 minutes, there's no dialogue. I was just blown away by everything they were showing with just sounds and pictures and the animation. And I was like, where's this movie going? And then you like meet up with the humans finally, who are all fat. And I was just like, wow, this movie was so visually stunning, and the message just blew me away. And then I remember the movie ending and leaving the theater with the guy I was on a date with and going like, wow, wasn't that whole beginning just amazing? Like, there was no dialogue for like 30 minutes. And he was just like, yeah, it was okay. And I was like, okay, I see. We didn't date for very much longer after that. So yeah, very vivid memory of seeing this in theaters, because it was like my first date. But yeah, I loved it. And I remember being really excited about buying it on DVD when it came out on DVD. And we watched it at home a few times. But after a while, the message of it, like Grace was kind of saying it, like, it is so cute. And also the message is like too real, to where it wasn't one I wanted to kind of go back to and go back to. Like, because it was like, it's kind of too much sometimes, like the emotions I feel when I watch it. But after rewatching it this week, I think it's my top three list of Pixar movies has changed. I'll just put it that way. All right. So that was everyone's memories of WALL-E. Next up, let's talk about some box office and movie trivia. So Daniel, take it away.
All right, let's go over these numbers, try to put them in context here. So at the box office, $224 million in the United States and a little over $500 million worldwide. So closer to like, it did a little better than Ratatouille, but not as much as Cars and The Incredibles. So fifth highest grossing movie of that year, 2008, which was... yeah, I had to compete against the first Iron Man and The Dark Knight. I don't know if that hurt its box office or whatever, but big hit. Not Pixar's biggest hit, but certainly solid. Did quite well at the Oscars. It was nominated for 6 Oscars and won only one. It won Best Animated Feature. Beat Kung Fu Panda and Bolt. Nominated for Original Screenplay, which is interesting, because this has some of the least amount of dialogue probably of any Pixar movie, and a lot of sound awards. Original Score was nominated. Peter Gabriel's song Down to Earth was nominated for Original Song, and Sound Mixing and Sound Editing. So, you know, it was another generally well reviewed and well awarded movie for Pixar.
I just want to say the reason that there isn't a lot of dialogue, I think, is why it was nominated for Best Screenplay.
Possibly.
Like all the other stuff they had to write about, like, and then Wally goes and then a sandstorm comes, but then he stops so the cockroach can come, you know, like all that little stuff is exactly why, like, it's amazing. Sorry, just had to chime in.
So The Dark Knight was the top movie that year, and the first Iron Man came after that. Oh, Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull.
Boo. Saw that movie with the same guy, just to throw that out there.
Yeah, I know. We don't want it. We don't need to talk too much about that movie. I mentioned Kung Fu Panda. Oh, we got the first Twilight movie, and then a lot of sequels like Madagascar 2, Quantum of Solace, a second Chronicles of Narnia movie.
Wow, this is definitely like my prime movie going age. I saw every single one of those movies in theaters.
Really? What else we got? Oh, Slumdog Millionaire. That was your Best Picture winner.
Oh, okay. Actually, I did not see Madagascar 2 in theaters. Just want to throw that out there. Didn't go see that, but I saw all the other ones.
No one believes you.
yeah, you're just making this up now, Kelly.
Really didn't go see
that. I haven't seen Slumdog Millionaire, maybe since the first time I saw it. I don't know. That movie's so weird.
I've actually never seen it.
I don't know if I don't know how well that one would hold up.
Daniel, you and I went to see that together.
I do recall. I do recall seeing that.
It's a fun movie, but it doesn't. It's not going to age well. It hasn't aged.
No,
well.
I don't think it's aged super well.
All right. Anything else, Daniel? You want to add?
I don't know. 2008 was not the most exciting movie year.
What? Iron Man and Dark Knight? That was
okay. Iron Man and Dark Knight were a big deal. Okay, I'll give you that. But like, I don't know. In terms of the middle tier of movies, wasn't as interesting, I guess.
This might be like kind of the turning point where like good movies stop getting made and it's just superhero movies and shit. Like, I don't know.
Well, like 2008,
it's a gradual evolution, of course. Go ahead.
2008 is also when like Breaking Bad started. So like. Yeah. This is when TV was starting to get real serious too. So
wasn't this? I think the writer's strike was happening before this or right around this time.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. That's a good. Yes, it was. You're right.
Also like the recession too. So less people were going to the movie.
Sure.
The recession hadn't really happened yet.
No,
actually, not. Well, actually,
happened, like,
no, it was because this was right before Obama got elected.
The housing crisis at least was happening.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, right. No, but Grace is right that the recession didn't really kick in till like the next year. And people actually went to more movies during the recession because they stopped going on bigger vacations and just started going to movies instead.
That's actually really interesting.
Instead of going to Disneyland or Vegas
people,
or something.
When the world is in crisis, people spend more money on entertainment because they want to escape.
1920s, point in case.
Yeah.
Yes.
In 30s. And every time, really.
Point
right
in
now.
Case, Grace. That's how I spend it.
Can you watch that a day? Point in case.
Watching that a day. Point number case.
All right. Grace, I'm going to turn it over to you for our fun facts.
Hey, a couple of fun facts for you guys. So the sound designer of this movie also worked on the Star Wars trilogy, after which he apparently is known to have told his wife he'll never work on a robot movie ever again. Luckily, he still did. He created a library of somewhere around 2,400 sounds for this movie. Things that he used to create those sounds include an electric toothbrush, shopping carts hitting each other, and a Nikon camera shutter sound for Wally's eyebrows. He also used a recording of himself sneezing while he was running a vacuum to make the sound of Wally sneezing. The cockroach, his character is nicknamed Hal, which is based off of a silent movie producer, as well as Hal the Computer from 2001. There's some other references to the movie Alien throughout this. They were also had a storyline that was going to include aliens. One of them being that they went to some planet that was ruled by some alien royal family that had a history of treating their robot servants poorly. But they scrapped that. And then there was another one where Eve Eva gets kidnapped by aliens and Wally has to track them down. But they scrapped that as well, obviously.
Ooh, we got a sequel.
Ooh, sequel.
Yeah. So let's see. They also made a really big point in this movie to make it look like it was filmed on cameras to have really good cinematography. And when they were doing that, they even put in camera imperfections to help achieve this, like lens flares and things like that, to make it feel like a movie and not something that's animated. All the captains that you see, all the photos of past captains are modeled after Pixar employees. And then again, like we've seen in other movies, the voice for Eva was supposed to be just a stand-in. It was a Pixar employee. But at the end, the producers just liked it so much, they decided to not change it and use that for the whole movie. Pretty fun.
Awesome. Those are some fun facts.
One more thing. the guy who did Wally also voiced R2-D2. Mm-hmm.
No way.
Oh, because it's the same guy who did the sounds.
Ben yeah. Burt.
Yeah. Ben Burt, that's the guy. He did like 80% of the cast. I mean, you know, characters, that is.
He
like,
basically is the movie.
Yeah.
Okay, where was the Pizza Planet truck, guys? Come on. So this one was obvious.
It was on the captain's computer when he was looking up Earth. No, it wasn't. I just made that up right now.
Isn't was it in the junk? Like, was it trash?
Yes. But I like, mean, when do we see it?
Be really specific. So I feel like I can't chime in.
Jimmy, you can share it.
No.
It's sad because I just watched it today.
I remember like pointing this out to Cynthia and she was asleep, but I can't remember myself now.
It's just like in the beginning when, like in the junkyard when Wally starts to clean up trash. Actually, no, it's when Eva comes, she's there and she's like, you know how she has her little blue light and she's like scanning for plants. You see her very obviously scan like the Pizza Planet truck, and
it's pretty overt. One of the more overt ones compared to some other where it's like apparently going by somewhere in the
back. Like in Ratatouille, it's like in the background on the bridge.
Right. And in Cars, it's like parked in the parking lot or something somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Off the street. I don't know.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't see that. Anyway, this one is much more noticeable. If you're looking for it, you can see it. It's right there.
But come on, guys. We all know where A113 is in this, yes?
All over.
It was everywhere.
It's a directive.
It's the autopilot's directive to not let them come back to Earth. And it's like very vividly just in the middle of the autopilot's face like at one point. So
what do those numbers mean, Kelly?
So A113 is the art room at Cal Arts where all the Pixar employees like went to college together before they started Pixar. And A113 was on the license plate in Toy Story. And so they put A113 and the Pizza Planet truck in all the movies from Toy Story. All righty. So quick synopsis of the movie for those of you who either haven't seen Wall-E or haven't seen it in a while. Full disclosure, I basically copy pasted this from IMDb, but I did add a little bit of my own stuff in here. So here we go. In a distant but not so unrealistic future where mankind has abandoned Earth because it has become covered with trash from products sold by the powerful by and large corporation, Wall-E, a garbage collecting robot, has been left to clean up the mess. Mesmerized with trinkets of Earth's history and show tunes, Wall-E is alone on Earth except for a sprightly pet cockroach. One day, Eve, a sleek reconnaissance robot, is sent to Earth to find proof that life is once again sustainable. Wall-E rescues Eve from a dust storm and shows her a living plant he found amongst the rubble, all the while falling in love with her. Consistent with her directive, Eve takes the plant and automatically enters a deactivated state except for a blinking green beacon. Wall-E doesn't understand what has happened to his new friend, but true to his love, he protects her from wind, rain, and lightning. One day, a massive ship comes to reclaim Eve, but Wall-E hitches a ride on the outside of the ship to rescue her. The ship arrives back at a large space cruise ship, which is carrying all of the humans who evacuated Earth 700 years earlier. The people of Earth ride around this space resort on hovering chairs, which give them a constant feed of TV and video chatting. They drink all of their meals through a straw out of laziness and or bone loss, and are all so fat they can barely move. While the autopilot computer, acting on hastily given instructions sent many centuries before, tries to prevent the people of Earth from returning by stealing the plant. Wally, Eve, and the portly captain and a band of broken robots stage a mutiny. Finally, all the robots and humans band together to make the journey back to Earth to restart human life on the planet. And that is basically the story of Wally.
And that's the origin of the whole Pixar universe, it turns out.
Yes, and we'll save that for another episode.
Yeah.
All right, so as we start out each major discussion, overall animation style. I know Grace earlier talked about how they wanted it to really look like a movie and not animation, which is cool. I actually didn't know that. The thing I really want to point out about the animation is the how well they animated Wally. Like, Wally is animated so well. I love his little eye, the way they really bring across his like human emotions through his eyes, and the way he like shakes when he's scared.
Yeah,
I really, really love the way they animated Wally. And I mean, the sky and the space looks really beautiful as well. Go ahead, Grace.
Sorry, they got the idea for Wally's face and that expression of his eyes from a pair of binoculars, apparently.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you can see that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then the one other thing I was going to say that I forgot was the people that and their like fat, useless bodies, they were going to be at one point just like blobs of essentially jello. But they realized that that wasn't really going to work. They also tried to give them like their own gibberish language, but then they took that away too.
Yeah,
I'm glad both of those things.
Yeah.
I'm glad they scrapped both of those ideas. That would, yeah, have not made the movie.
But the expression in Wally's face, I think, is what makes it really. That's why he's so sweet and endearing.
You know, that scene in the end where he's like not himself, you know, when he gets like rebooted.
Yeah,
and then, like all his memories. The way they show that is that's really, I don't know, it just encapsulates the awesomeness of the animation. And as far as like the characterization of him and the way that he moves and like the position of his little binocular eyes, because when he's wiped clean of his memories, they're like straight and flat, and it just gives this like robotic sort of emotional tone, flat tone. And then she, you know, she leans against him. We kind of think he's gone forever for a moment because Pixar, the music and everything. And then she sparks him. And then does the tape start playing? Something happens. But then his eyes adjust like crazy. Mm-hmm. And like, again, going back to the sound effects being so perfect. What did you say? It was a Nikon camera or something that he mm-hmm. used?
That's really, the shutter sound of a Nikon.
Right, it's just like, it's a brilliant sound. But the way that it jostles into place and then it settles in this sort of sad or nervous or worried diagonal position, that is Wally's face. You know what I mean? It's the same mechanical piece, but it was flat for when he was a robot. And after it does its adjustments, it ends up in this like different angle, which captures his sort of nervous or helpless, maybe at times. He's not helpless. He's a hero. But anyway, you know what I mean? He's sort of wimpy or whatever disposition that he has, kind of like
just like scary, he's like scaredy cat. Yeah. It just like he's anxious. Like a little anxious, kid almost
yeah. anxious. Anyway, yeah, I love that moment. I think it's so well animated, and it just captures what you were talking about, Kelly, about how well they animate his eyes in particular to show his emotions and to show his character, like his essence, if you will. Yeah,
I will also say that the essence of this movie and the characters and everything about it is really highlighted by the score and the soundtrack. Like the old Broadway score and this sort of sentimental vibe that all of the strings are, you know, plucking your heartstrings. So, I mean, all of the animation, I feel like, has a through line, even though they're doing these really futuristic designs. Like Eve is so futuristic with like her body parts coming out of everywhere and blah, blah, blah. But I feel like all of it is given this really nostalgic and sort of, you know, Pixar and Disney are both so good at that. Like this really heartfelt sentimentality. And the animation, I feel like, is really served by that sound to sort of give an anchor and a backbone to it all.
Yeah, I appreciated the animation of like the super slick, clean robots and things that lived up on the Axiom ship, and the reflections from that, and like how clean the floors were, which makes that one little character that, you know, contamination or whatever it is, always trying to clean up Wally's little tracks. So that, so good. Create those shadows. And
I mean, yeah, you mentioned the sleek, clean surfaces, which are well done. But we were talking about Wally himself, and he's got a lot of like rusty and dirty right. sort of patches, which are also very well done and absolutely. Make it seem more real than if he was sleek throughout the whole movie. But you're right. You're right. Once you get up on that spaceship, you're kind of like, oh, wow. Like after mm-hmm. being in the dusty, dirty earth and everything for so long, it's very impactful the way it's animated.
I remember like when I first saw this movie, and this movie, unlike some of the ones in the past, doesn't really have like an intro too much. It kind of starts right away. I mean, you could argue that.
I think that Jimmy hit the nail on the head when he talked about it being silent for the beginning part of the film. And Daniel also mentioned how it was nominated for best screenplay without that much dialogue. I mean, these two robots are saying each other's name for most of the movie. And I think that the storytelling that's inherent in the image, and this ties back to the animation especially, they're telling us so much through imagery and through characterization of Wally and how he's interacting with this world. I think for me personally, and I won't take anything away from your, you know, takeaway, but for me, this is one of Pixar's strongest openings in terms of setting the world and bringing us into who's Wally, who's this little cockroach. And then where we go from there is so majestic due to where we started. So that's mine.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you misunderstood what I was saying, though. Like, to me, that's not the intro. That's like act one, that whole beginning when there isn't anything. I was going to say there isn't really setup, I guess is like really what I should have said. It's not like The Incredibles where they set you up for a couple minutes with like the interviews. Like, you're put right into Earth where it is with Wally. That's all yeah. I was going to say. There isn't really an introduction. It's just like, here's the world. I was going to say you could argue that there is sort of like a by and large commercial, and we see Wally going around for like the first couple minutes, and then they show like Wally on the screen, I guess technically is an intro. But I was kind of blown away by the fact that they kind of just are like, here's Earth. And I remember that being like kind of depressing the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, it is still, but the first time I saw it, I remember just being like, wow, it's just, that's wow. The Earth is gross and we're right in it. And here's this little robot. Yeah. And that was well done.
I would suggest, Kelly, the intro is everything up till like we see Wally for the first time, as it's like zooming in on Earth and you just hear like the Broadway music going on, and okay, up till so you understand that, oh, these towers are not buildings, they're piles of trash. Yeah. And then that's
okay,
like
guys,
your intro setup.
Fine, so. The intro, but you know what I'm saying? There isn't like a very specific setup like The Incredibles, like Finding Nemo, like Cars. Like, that's all I was saying.
No, that's totally true. I totally agree with you on that, honestly. Because like even Finding Nemo, you're right. Like there's a whole little anecdote at the beginning that's like separate, but like totally an intro that like launches this for Wally. You just are like plop, and you have to kind of figure out for yourself like what's going on. And I don't think you really do for like kind of for a while, honestly, like into the movie. Like I do remember seeing this movie and, you know, there's no talking, like it's mostly just like music and movements. And you really have to kind of like pay attention more than most Pixar movies, you know, because there's literally going on other than like this little robot crawling around these trash cubes. And like, I don't know, but still it's like super captivating, and it's like, it's still crazy that it can keep, you know, kids under 10 sitting in their chairs and focused.
I was actually just about to say, I do wonder if younger kids maybe struggled at all with that.
I think this is one of the more, a little more, not necessarily grown up, but a little more complex, like mature Pixar movies. Mature even feels like too strong of a word to say, but like, I don't know. I still think that every little kid has seen this movie,
you know, and knows who Wally is and stuff.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, there's a lot of great things about the opening. Whether or not it's like a separate opening, the way you guys are talking about it, but that truly opening shot of the dirty earth, which was very impactful because, like, we were talking about, like, the cultural stuff going on around global warming and stuff, sort of the way it is kind of now, like, reinvigorated, which is probably why it felt impactful again watching it. But paired with that music, I mean, that really hooked me. Like, just the musical opening, like, hearing the sound of a retro musical with that context, and it's saying, like, out there, and it's just, I don't know, it's making me think of space, but it's making me think of, like, the past, like, the olden times on Earth.
Like life. It makes you think of life.
The whole breadth of life. I mean, yeah, you could go deep, but it's very impactful. It's not an opening in the way that you were talking about it. Like, that's true. But whatever it is, that was really cool to me.
It kind of reminds me of Fantasia. You know, like Disney's Fantasia, like how all of it's like set to this, these grand symphonic, like, you know, orchestral music, and it's all about the animation paired with the bloops, like,
totally,
and the music.
Yeah.
That, and I don't want to take anything away from what you're talking about, Kelly, in terms of like structural intro, like, you know, whatever, but I think that opening moment of hearing that music against the space and all the objects surrounding Earth, to me, that is a very, like, for me personally, like an emotional and mental, like, introduction to where we're going to go. So,
all right. I think this is a really good segue to talk about, I mean, we've already kind of been talking about it, but the really overall message of the film, which is environmentalism and taking care of Earth, tied with, like, you know, corporate takeover. So anyone just want to say their general opinions or takeaways from what that message gave to them?
What struck me this time rewatching the movie is that the movie doesn't really get into the weeds of that stuff with, like, the environmental theme and the corporations and stuff. It's more interested in the story of the robots and the kind of, like, the environmental, well, I mean, yeah, it's obviously a major surface level theme, but it's not the main thing the movie wants you to, they want you to walk away from the movie with, you know, they want the story about the robots to take precedent. So I thought that was interesting because it doesn't, like I said, they don't get into weeds too much of explaining real stuff about the environment or the corporation stuff. I mean, I certainly liked that element the first time I saw it. I like they also imply that the corporation, like, became some sort of world government and that the CEO is like the equivalent of the president. And that's interesting. And again, the movie isn't very interested in unpacking the implications of that very much, is what I'm trying to say.
A corporate head becomes president.
But more than that, though, like it would be, I mean, it would be like if Jeff Bezos became like head of the United Nations right now, and then like other national governments dissolved. And again, the movie doesn't get into unpacking that too much. Although I think it's something, it's a big deal probably that Disney Pixar even had this environmental theme to begin with.
I think another important theme is the notion of fighting against conformity. It's interesting how all of the good, or, you know, robots on the ship, the ones that the ship has generated, all follow grid lines and stay in perfect rows, and everything goes the same. And the humans have no way to be other than what they have to become in that environment, which is a slovenly and lazy, and, you know, they literally have bone loss. I mean, that is so severe. And, you know, Wally doesn't really have anything to conform to necessarily. And then Eva, actually, she has to follow the directive that she's been programmed to do, right? And there's a point in the movie, I think, where she doesn't. You know how she's at the very end, she's supposed to take that plant up to the main captain's room, but she doesn't. she and Wally, or she decides to do something different. And of course, there's all those sort of mismatched robots, you know, that are broken, like that one funny guy, the umbrella that keeps going inside out, and all those. So it reminds me of the mismatched toys in Rudolph, and those toys from what's his name's next door neighbor in Toy Story that they still manage to rally.
Sid.
Still manage to rally and of course help at the climax of the film. So I think that's a huge theme.
Yeah. Just to sort of dovetail off that. I feel that Eve represents this sort of strict adherence to directive, to science, to everything. And Wally sort of represents the opposite, which is like sentiment and spirituality and emotion, but he doesn't know how to act. And all that Eve knows how to do is act. And they both learn how to meet each other in the middle. There's this sort of like beautiful message of, you do have to follow directive, but you also have to be a human at the same time. You know, it's holding on to these things that we hold dear. And I feel they're building so much sentiment throughout the movie, you know, not only from like Broadway, but all these objects that he has and these tactile and sensory connections that we have to the world. So I think that Wally learns a little bit, obviously through his actions, like how to be more direct. And I think that Eve learns how to appreciate the world around her, you know. And I didn't really see that my first time. So it was cool seeing that this time.
And Wally has something that, you know, is going to save us and is the evolutionary point as we grow and expand, which is curiosity. You know, he's curious. He wants to know how things work or what they might be. And I love that because I agree with that sentiment, that our curiosity and desire to understand the world around us, whether it's in ruins or not, is going to take us forward.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, there's a lot of themes going on, and I think you guys talked about all of them. That you just saying that, Mom, made me think about, or Cynthia, made me think about how at some point the captain is like making an announcement over the intercom, saying something like, oh, we're just going to be doing the same thing that all of our forefathers did. And so that's clearly sort of put forth as like a vice, another vice of like humans in this modern world, that they're lazy. They just stare at a screen and they don't have any ambition to like go out to adventure, to further their species or just, you know, themselves or anything. They're just so like, we're just going to do the same thing. So that line sort of struck to me as like, yeah, Wally does have that curiosity, like that word I didn't have until you just said it, but that curiosity and that wonder. There's that part where he sort of looks up into the sky and sees sort of the stars and like clicks play. This is right after watching the clip of Hello Dolly, and then he like clicks play on his thing, and it's almost like he's singing to himself while staring into space. And then I think that's when the laser dot comes and everything, you know, changes. Eva comes down and lands. But yeah, he does represent that curiosity, that wonderment at what is out there and pushing things forward and never just being complacent and being like, we're good. Like, we reached it. Let's just chill.
Jimmy, wasn't the captain kind of curious too? Isn't that when he's going, describe Dancy?
He was when he was contacted with Wally. Wally's the agent of change in the movie. Everything that comes in contact with Wally sort of develops this curiosity. It's almost like the spark that he is like spreading around, and that Eva eventually like gives back to him to bring him back, you know, from his robot state. But everybody he comes into contact with, including the captain, becomes infatuated with. I don't think the captain knows about Earth, and I might be wrong here, until he like the plant gets analyzed. Is that right, Kelly?
Yes.
So Wally brings the plant.
He has to ask the computer to define what Earth is for him because it's been 700 years.
Right.
I do want to chime in. Great points. Something else, like another theme of this movie, based on what you guys just were talking about, is what it really means to be human, because the actual humans in this movie are basically like robots, right? They ride around, they do the same thing every day. But the little robot of this movie is the one with emotions, with desires, with curiosity. And so it kind of begs the question of, yeah, like I said, what does it actually mean to be human with, you know, technology and artificial intelligence in our current worlds? You know, can something artificial be quote unquote human? Can it really have those emotions? And I know we're not really there in AI at this point in, like, in general, technology in the world, but we could be there if we wanted to. And I don't know, it just, they did a really good job of, you know, ask, like I said, asking that question, because the humans are acting more like robots than Wally and all the little robots that start following them around.
A really great point. It seems so clear now, but I hadn't thought about that, about how robotic the humans are compared to this one ancient robot living on this deserted planet in their room. Yeah, that's, yeah, it's a great point.
Also, like, yeah, the evil that destroyed Earth was a live action real human instead of being a digitalized version of a human.
Yeah. I was wondering if we were going to talk about that. Is this the first time that Pixar put in live action people to their frames?
Yes.
Yes.
And that's why I have to say it. This is where the Pixar theory comes in. And I'm not going to get super in depth with it, but that basically in the Pixar universe, humans were real humans. And because they had to leave Earth for 700 years, they turned into these giant globby animated humans. And then all the other movies are like that universe of humans, kind of. That's like part of it. It's a very broad theory, but
so like
just thought I'd throw that out there.
De-evolution, like they devolved or evolved,
yeah, or basically. Okay. Yes. Yes, they sort of devolved. And then when they come back to Earth, the humans turn into the monsters that we see in Monsters, Inc. And I'm just going to end it right there. That's just part of the Pixar theory. You know, it's interesting, Cynthia, when you talked about conformity and, you know, how they're just riding around. They have to, like, follow the lines. And then when Mary meets Wally, she kind of gets thrown off of her line and she's like, I didn't know I had a pool. And she's all just blown away by the wonder of space. Same thing happens to the John character. And yeah, little Mo, whose whole goal is to clean the ship, he like doesn't want to leave his line, but is like, I have to leave my line to clean up the mess. And like, he also follows Wally and like discovers like a new thing as a robot. I don't know. I don't know what where I was going with that. Just that I agree. And it's right. Just that is a really good point I didn't think about before.
That the villain is the autopilot.
Right.
And the
It's like a metaphor.
The solution.
But that's not new. I mean, we've seen robot computer villains in space. Well,
2001 being the most important, I guess.
Yeah. It's also a push for like from the environmental theme that creative solutions outside of humans is what they're pushing. That like, auto is the bad version of what AI can become, but look at what else could happen. We could use robots to help rebuild the planet alongside us as a team instead of us or them, and don't let it, you know, be in much in our lives. So I think it's part of their message is to say that we should utilize technology to fix or stop the destruction of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting how I think when I was talking about the humans and Jacob, I think you said that they like devolve. It's interesting. Yeah. The humans in this story devolve and Wally evolves for 700 years. Like he learns how to survive. He learns how to change his parts. All those other, there's other Wallys. There was a ton of Wallys who all just like died or like didn't learn how to regenerate enough.
Isn't the theory isn't the theory just like someone forgot to turn him off? Like the other Wallys got turned off and he just like accidentally didn't get turned off.
And I've never heard that, but I don't think that makes sense
though, because everything on the ship is still waiting for the like directive of getting plants.
So I think that all the other Wallys just like, I agree with Grace, just like hit some sort of roadblock, like they're things stopped working, or because the main thing, and this ties in towards the end of the story too, is like, and they show us this right at the beginning, that like every day he has to like absorb the sun. And I just kind of assume that these other Wallys got stuck somewhere, or like something broke to where they weren't able to make themselves absorb the solar energy to keep running. But like Wally just knew how to keep replacing his parts to stay alive, basically.
All right. So I guess there isn't a canonical explanation for that then.
I think I've heard that.
I see what you're saying.
You know, that people say that he's the only one left for some reason. But I was just going to say that it would be interesting to see if the Mars rover played any part in like influencing Wally, because that's like a solar powered little guy that, you know, with the same sort of track wheels, I think.
Ooh, and that's a good point.
Happy birthday every year.
Wally kind of looks like a Mars rover actually too.
You know what, Grace? I feel like you're correct. Like I did see a video or see something that was like Wally was based on the Mars rover actually.
There's something I forgot to say in memories, but it connects to right now. There's a movie from 1986 called Short Circuit. It's a live action movie, but the robot is very similar, at least the eyes and the head and then the arms and then the track for propulsion. Very similar, much larger in terms of like to human ratio. But I remember thinking that when I saw the commercials for this movie. But this style of robot with like the binocular eyes and the tracks, and it's effective. That's why NASA uses them.
There was something similar on the Disney Channel. I remember this woman specifically talking about centrifugal force and how roller coasters stay on the tracks. So she would pop in during like Disney Channel movies and stuff and explain things. But there was also a little robot guy with her sometimes. Do you guys remember him? Mm-mm. He had the same sort of binocular eyes, but was very stripped down, kind of just all metal.
The movie Surfers.
Yes.
Is it the same? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When they would do this little Disney heart or the shape of the head, he would come in and talk about stuff like maybe it was about the parks. I don't remember, but same sort of robot.
Yeah. Another thing that I was thinking of, you know, what is the shared history of something? I mean, do you think the humans on that ship really knew anything about life on Earth, or that they wanted even to go back there? You
know, no, because the captain didn't even know what Earth was. He didn't even know that was a directive. It's been 700 years.
Right.
700.
Yeah. And we living
from
in
this
our
was
life,
made.
In our life, we can't imagine, right, that people aren't going to remember our civilization, you know, but why should they? Look at the civilizations that existed for thousands and thousands of years, and they're non-existent now.
Mm-hmm. I do think that they didn't know what it was or know that they would want to go back. But as soon as they're there, as soon as they find out that Earth is a thing, they're like, yeah, that, because just they realize, you know, when Mary and John are thrown off their little things and start walking around the ship and look at the sky, they're like, wow, look at life's amazing, you know. I don't know. I was thinking about how they're like really stuck on their screens and how that was poignant in 2008. But now, like with COVID and we're just stuck at home and we're on our, like now we're communicating through screens so much. I was like thinking about it like, okay, now that we're in even a more screen oriented part of our lives, we are all so yearning to not be on our screens. And I was just thinking about how at the time and with like kids and video games and computers, it's like, yeah, look at where we're headed with screens. But when it's literally all we have is screens, I was like, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm thinking like, could that really happen? But I kind of think no, because like wish nothing more than to go out and just be with people and not be on my phone, not be on my computer and not be looking at my TV. And I just think that's an interesting take, you know, to look at it that way.
They gave it hope because when John and Mary, they're in the pool and they're playing, and then the robots are supposed to kind of corral the humans all the time and keep their focus, and they're off their screens, they're in the water, and they're defiant because their humanity, their analog selves kick back in really fast. And realize, oh my God, this is so much fun. He splashes the robot and short circuits him or whatever. And I think that's kind of the message of hope, is that it doesn't take a lot for us to divorce ourselves from technology to find ourselves again. We just have to make the one first choice to not pick up the device and go play in the pool, go outside, go walk the dog, go whatever. And I think that that's kind of the message, and is that there's hope. It's not just a spiraling thing out of control.
Yeah, definitely the hope is there.
All right. Well, I think it's time to move on to our last main discussion point of this movie, which is, this is the first, I know we kind of mentioned some in the past, but this is the first Pixar love story, I would argue. This is the first love story Pixar movie, and it happens between two robots.
if I'm not mistaken, this kind of the only one. Like, there hasn't really been another one where where a love story is the main point of the movie.
I'd have to look at the list.
But I feel like that's like the central plot line of this movie. In other movies,
I mean, it depends on how you want to define love story. Like, I would sort of,
I mean, there's great friendship stories.
I would argue that Brave is sort of a love story, but it happens between a mother and a daughter.
No, that's not what we're talking about.
Well, so is Toy Story. I mean, if you're going to include the bromances, you know, Toy Story.
I'm just trying to argue and find it.
Yeah.
Up is centered around a love story in a way, but it's not about that current love story. But no, yeah, right.
That's still like, that's not the main plot, though.
No, I'm looking at the list and I'm agreeing with you that based on what I'm looking at right now of all the Pixar movies, this is the only real love story. Yeah, that's about two people, two robots, but two characters falling in love.
Right. I feel like that's how they got people like me. Like, there's some people, sometimes there can be a love story in a movie that's like the selling point, but then they'll sneak other ideas into that. Here it's like, oh, here come for robots in space and environmental themes and sci-fi concepts. But like, that's how they hook you. But then like, they're going to stick you with the love story at the end. Because sometimes you would rather watch robots fall in love than humans, but just me, but
I think we were talking about, you know, a lot about how there's no dialogue and stuff and how awesome that is. And it's not a blank slate, but I don't know. It's up to interpretation, sort of. What exactly are they saying to each other? Like, and it's actually so well done that it's clear, like, the general message. But we get to all put our own words to what they're saying. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, so like, it makes this romance, instead of cheesy romantic dialogue, we get to fill in the blanks ourselves and just feel the emotion of it and not get bogged down with like, that's unrealistic or who would say that or...
Oh, right. It's visual storytelling like totally works better in some ways for that. I mean,
for the romantic aspect, I think. Right. Is what I meant. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Kelly, I have a question, and I'm not sure if there's a better, you know, section coming up that might be more focused on this. Why do you think they chose Hello, Dolly? You guys, I mean, most of us grew up with kind of musical theater knowledge. You know, we appreciated it. People did it in high school. And all of a sudden, here comes Hello, Dolly over and over. And I have seen Hello, Dolly. I've seen the play on which it's based called The Matchmaker. Very familiar with it. And, you know, they didn't have to add anything sappy to the love story between Wally and Eva because that was so sappy, you know, in Hello, Dolly. But you guys have any thoughts as to why that? I mean, they could have picked any musical, right? It could have been South Pacific.
I know why. So Thomas Newman, who was the composer of this film, is the nephew of the guy who co-scored it with Jerry Herman.
Oh, yeah. There was a famous Newman related to Newman. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the relative of one of the score guys on Hello, Dolly did this.
Still, they still had to make a choice based on it fitting the story.
Yeah, I think it's the epitome of what something trying to understand the human condition, it like those two songs incorporate all that. And longing, love, hope, fun, lightness, like hope, all of it.
And it's impressive how
does anyone know if like Hello Dolly is about two different like types of people getting together?
No, it's more about like, well, that song Put On Your Sunday Clothes is more about like two people that have been very sheltered and, you know, live far out of the city, breaking out and going into the city for the first time and exploring.
Right.
You know,
what's the love song though?
It Only Takes a Moment. I don't think that those characters are opposites. Okay. Really. No.
So it's not like mirroring like
the Eva and Wally. Yeah. Okay. No, I don't think so. Not to me at least, but
I think the sappiness is part of what Wally loves about it so much. Because totally. it doesn't register to him as sappy.
No.
You know, he takes it at face value. It's just like right. The most beautiful, like this love and like the way they sing the harmony. I mean, yeah. That little clip of the movie, I bet that movie, I don't know. I was thinking about this as I was watching it. Like if I watched that whole movie of Hello Dolly, which I wanted to do, but never got around to before we did this. I might get a little bored at some point, you know, it might not be that, but they really highlighted it very well. And apparently they picked songs that aren't even like the big numbers that are remembered from that show. Which I might be wrong about, but I heard someone say that.
I looked that up and they specifically chose two songs that are not like the well-known, like if someone said name songs from Hello Dolly, they wouldn't necessarily name those two is basically the article I read.
Yeah. I mean,
Hello and Dolly. I don't really know Hello Dolly at all. I don't know.
I only know the titular song where they're saying, mm-hmm. Hello Dolly. Yeah.
I can
hear you, Brian.
Yeah, go ahead.
I said I was the star of it at my high school. So,
oh,
Byron, in regards to your question, the people that fall in love in Hello Dolly, the young lovers, you know, they are opposite, but there's kind of a lot of pretending to be what they're not, people hiding, you know, so that could be extrapolated out to be similar to something in the storyline and Wally, but. That's not exactly obvious.
It's a cat and mouse type of, yeah.
Such like a beautiful song.
I mean, I don't want to give anything away, but my goodness, when he's watching that scene, I mean, it made me realize, it reminded me how much I love musicals. Like, just aww. Watching him watch that scene, I'm just like, oh yeah, like, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to explain. Really,
now that I think about it, Byron, I guess I will say that it is about kind of like, not two opposite people, but two people kind of just from like different places bonding, like that kind of, you know, because like one of the characters in Hello Dolly is for like the Eve character, I guess, not even, but like, you know, in that way is from the city. And like Wally and the other character, you know, is from like kind of the outskirts, like Yonkers, you know?
Right.
So. I guess you could argue that.
I was going to just say earlier, though, like, it really, the whole Hello Dolly thing obviously just sets up, it teaches Wally what love is. Like, Wally wouldn't know what love is other than that movie. And, like, his whole desire to hold Eve's hand, oh, my God, it, like, breaks my heart.
Well, he doesn't have, like, a database where he can look up the definition of love or something.
But he just... Oh my God, I'm going to cry. Know. Like, but that's just sort of... love it so much, how much he wants to hold her hand.
There's no, like...
That's but, what but like, music specifically and like a movie to complement it captures about love that the definition couldn't, you know? Right.
But could a robot understand something that doesn't have a definition though?
But Wally can but because Wally evolves and learns. That's the whole thing. Wally can learn. Okay.
But does it learn emotions though?
But he doesn't necessarily understand it, and that's what's so cute. He, and like you guys were talking, some of you had just been in serious relationships and saw this movie, and that's what we all went through when we tried to define love for ourselves. He doesn't really know. He just really wants it and loves it. He wants to love, and he wants to feel it and understand it, and that's the way you do it. You don't read about it. You do it. And that's kind of like when he's left without a database, there is nothing for him to look up except for Hello Dolly, and It Only Takes a Moment really is... you know, a 3.5 minute definition of love.
But you could argue that he doesn't really know what it is, but he wants it. And then as soon as Eve shows up, then he finally does know what love is once he's with Eve. Like, she is like, oh, that's it. And if he hadn't been watching Hello, Dolly! To kind of teach him what it is, and Eve showed up,
well,
maybe it would have been different. I think I don't the know. Argument I'm just like thinking start, right now
the
about
argument
it.
Would start with, is that it? And that's what promotes him to make a little fake robot right. next to her, all those kind of things. So he goes into the process of discovery rather than knowing that it's it right away. It's not love at first sight. It's
infatuation.
Yeah. And he investigates and invests himself in it. And then that's the discovery he makes. And then the hand holding, he realizes that's like the last component he doesn't understand. And there you go. And then the kiss and all that.
Well, it's so sweet, the hand-holding, when you see it come back around and Eva does it herself.
We already talked about animation, right? Oh my God. When he's watching the video and he's holding his own hand, the way that all the pieces of his hand are animated, like it's a real functioning machine. There's like, it pivots, it extends, it's all like, it's so well done. It's fluid yet like sort of rigidly mechanical at the same time.
And such a moment too, right?
Yeah.
Like, kids do that, especially when, or young adults or whoever, think about the sensation of that, or, you know, someone touching your face, you know what I'm saying? Like, and longing that even before you, like Jake said, even before you know what it is, you know that you want it.
Yeah.
I was going to just say, like, going back to what Jimmy said, the way they also animate towards the end too, when Wally's like, we don't know if Wally's going to survive. And Eve watches all her like security footage of like when Wally was taking care of her. And then that's when she realizes like, oh my God, I love Wally too. And she, her, both of her little like hands that are just like little, like almost like straight fins. And then her like little hands come out and she does it to herself too, the way that's animated. It's just, and she does the same thing Wally does, and the way it's like a similar, the way they show it similarly, but the way they, she looks different and the way they animate it just slightly differently. I don't know. I was just saying, like, they also did a great job, like, tying that in, showing the similarities and differences between Wally and Eve discovering that, at, you know, separately, but the
just
same
thing. Just one more thing about the animation in her face when she's watching the footage, you can see this moment of her being like, Wally, like, that's such a strange emotion. I don't even know what that is to describe it in words, but they let us see it so clearly on her face, which is cool.
And when she lights the lighter and he's like, I didn't even know it could do that. That there's no dialogue, but it's so well animated. Like, he's like, oh, look, it opens. And she goes, psst, and he kind of like, what the heck? Like, it's a little more silly than I'm making it sound. It's not like super serious. It's supposed to be kind of funny, but. Gosh, it's just so well animated. Yeah.
I remember the first time I saw it, and when she goes into like protection mode when she sees the plant, I was like, oh shit. Like, I remember thinking like, oh, this movie's gonna go somewhere that we don't know. And this time when I watched it recently, I just remember that animation of her sort of like floating up and getting sort of like sentient or whatever. It's just or like sentinel-like rather. Yeah. So cool.
Also, tying that into what you guys talked about earlier with like the conformity idea and like getting out of your conformity, and how when we first meet Wally, his directive, as they call it, is to clean up Earth, right? Eve's directive is to find plants and bring it back to the spaceship. But throughout the movie, both of their quote unquote directives change to taking care of each other. Their directives change to, I need to save my robot friend. / lover.
Well, they both succeed in their directives too. I mean, ultimately, right? Yeah,
that's true.
Well, the moment she gets on Earth, she like, oh, I'm free for a minute, and goes flying around. She enjoys not being part of her directive for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to take away from what you were saying, Kelly. You're totally right. Yeah, well, they break
maybe
away.
That's why their directives can change to looking out for each other, is because they may have completed the first one. Like, Earth is clearly clean enough for something to grow. So then I guess Wally's probably close to completing his first directive. And if she's found life on Earth, then she's completed hers. So then they can move on to having a new directive of caring for each other.
I see your point. I would argue no, though, because at the end, when Wally's like basically dying, they're still trying to get the plant into that like thing in the middle of the spaceship. And when they put the plant in the thing, then it autopilots them back to Earth. And they're trying to get it to the thing, but Eve doesn't care about that. All she cares about is getting Wally safe, which also requires them to go back to Earth. So I guess it's actually kind of the same thing now that I think about it. But she doesn't just care about getting the plant into the thing anymore. All she cares about is, I think Wally's like almost going to go into the trash compactor and be blown into space. And he's like, no, take the plant. And she's like, no, screw the plant. I got to get Wally out of here. So it's true. They're like close, but I think at least in Eve's directive, like Eve chooses to no longer worry about the plant as much as she worries about Wally. All right. Well, I think it's time to move on to other facts about the actors and the audio. I know Grace talked a lot about the audio and sound editing, but Jimmy, you want to add anything about the other actors or anything?
Well, yeah. I mean, the main point was just that Ben Burtt is an Academy Award-winning sound designer who did his first work on Star Wars, actually. And he's considered the father of modern sound design. In Star Wars, you know, he made the sounds of the lightsabers, like all of the sounds that the lightsabers make, which is like, you know, varied and so awesome. And anyway, as well as R2-D2 and Chewbacca. What was the director's name of this movie again? I'm sorry, I'm forgetting. Stanton? Mike Stanton?
Andrew Stanton.
Yeah, so in one of these things on YouTube I was watching, he was like, you know, I give myself complete credit for tracking down Ben Burtt and getting him to agree to do this movie. But beyond that, all the credit goes to him. Because he was essentially 80% of the characters in the movie voicing them. There's no dialogue. All of the sentimentality and emotion we're getting from their, you know, quote-unquote dialogue, you know, the communication they're having, is all through him. And so he used all sorts of crazy techniques to make the sounds in the film. He did use like physical sound makers as sort of like an homage to the old Disney studio sound effect people. They would have like all their various contraptions, like a crank that sounded like a machine gun, or like the little piece of leather that sounded like someone sneaking in like creaky boots, right? So he would use certain things like that to give the movie like a sense of realism, like a real actual sounds as opposed to digital, like the things Grace was mentioning, the cameras and other things. But yeah, what he did for Wally and for Eva was he himself recorded Wally's lines, like him just making little noises as a human, obviously. And Alyssa Knight, who worked at Pixar, did Eve's lines. And then he manipulated it with what's like a digital pen, you know, like what a digital artist might use on like a digital pad. And as he drew the pen along, well, making contact with the pad would cue the sound clip to start. And he would drag it to the right for volume and up and down for pitch. And so he would take a clip of the actor saying, like, directive, and he would manipulate it to give it that sort of robot-y warping, like, you know, directive or like, Eva. So it's really cool to see footage of him sort of manipulating the voice samples in that way. And apparently they just had tons and tons of like different Evas and Wallys, like sound recordings that he had made. And they're like going through, okay, we need an Eva that sounds sort of sad, but somewhat hopeful. And like, just like trying to find the little one with a certain inflection he did with that little pen tool that matched the emotion they were going for. So anyway, yeah, he was in production, in a part of the production of this movie way earlier than a sound designer would ever be normally. Because, you know, they're storyboarding and they're assembling the movie, directing it with just the hand-drawn images. And they need some sort of dialogue. They always do, you know. But in this case, they're using a lot of sound effects. So he was there taking notes and giving input and coming up with, like, rough tracks or rough examples of what might work early on, which I thought was really interesting because, we all talked about how struck we were by the fact that there's limited dialogue and how well they tell the story without it. And I never thought of specifically sound effects. I thought of music, like Byron had mentioned, and I thought of animation too. It looks so realistic. They're so well designed, but I never thought of the sound effects before. And it's just, it was really fascinating to get to kind of study a little bit about it because they really put a lot of time, research, and thought into it like Pixar always does. But beyond Ben Burtt, there was a few other voice actors. Jeff Garlin, who's like the big guy from Curb Your Enthusiasm. I think he's the dad in the Goldbergs. He's the captain, the guy who's like, oh, wait, what's Earth? You know, Fred Willard is from the Christopher Guest movies. He's the only live actor to ever be in the movie. He was Shelby, or in a Pixar movie, I mean. He was Shelby Forthright, the president of Earth guy. MacIntalk, which is like a computer program where you type in what you want the computer to say, and then the computer reads it. That's what they use to make the voice of Otto, like the big captain's wheel robot. So that wasn't even an actor at all, just a computer program. John Ratzenberger, of course, did My Guy John. Kathy Naimi, I am not sure if I'm saying that right.
Najimi.
Yeah, see, so I recognized her when I saw her picture. I was like, what is she from? And she's from Hocus Pocus.
Hocus Pocus, baby. She's been in a lot of stuff, though.
Sister Act. Yeah, Sister Act, too. I don't know. Anyway, she's not a name that I recognize. If y'all are out there hating me for not recognizing her name, I'm sorry. But she's great. She's really good in Hocus Pocus. Sigourney Weaver is the ship's computer. So that was kind of cool, too. A little nod to Alien. I'm not sure. Somebody mentioned that they made nods to Alien, which I'd like to know more about. But there's definitely nods to 2001.
There's something else about, like, the mothership and how Wally has his own little mothership to return to, his little shed, I think was the other point. I'll try to find the Alien references for you.
Yeah, I mean, we can just think of them, I guess. But yeah.
Jimmy, you know, it's so cute when a character does actually say another word. I can't remember if it's little Mo or Wally, but somebody says, whoa.
Whoa.
It's when Wally and Mo meet, and I don't know which one of them it is, but I think maybe it's Wally saying it to Mo because Mo's like trying to like clean all up in his business, and Wally's like, whoa.
Yeah, but Mo said
that definitely made me laugh.
Wally's like, oh, you want to clean dirt? Here, we'll clean this dirt.
But yeah, I mean, what a good call on their part to get this guy, because they realized they wanted to do it with no dialogue. They realized ahead of time how integral the sound effects would be. And this guy's like a wizard, like to watch footage of him talk. Like he's a down to earth guy. Like he's not like up his own ass or anything, but he's just clearly so knowledgeable and such a wise, you know, guy. And like I said earlier, supposedly the father of modern sound design.
Jimmy, for me and other people listening to our podcast, how would we search for that video about him? Was that on YouTube under his name? Can you repeat the name?
You know, I actually have a little clip about the sound effects in the movie that I'll play real quick. But his name is...
Jimmy with his clips.
His name is Ben Burtt.
Okay.
And if you just look up Wally making of, that's how I found it. But if you do Wally sound design, it'll come up, you know, anything like that. All right, so here's just a little clip of... Andrew Stanton and some other people talking about how important the sound design was to this movie.
The big thing that's unique about sound design and animation is the fact that you get nothing for free. You don't get on a set and hear the way the environment sounds naturally, or the way somebody walks across a room, or just their voice. But in this case, because there isn't dialogue that often, it puts all this emphasis on every little squeak, beep, squawk. Now they all have to mean something, or you have to be careful that if you use them, people will think they mean something. The sound that Eve and Wally made, that was their character. That was how people were going to connect to them. So you have to be in complete control about whether there should be sound and what sounds they are and how many they are and when they happen. You learn that the most important thing that you can do as a sound designer is to make the right choice for the right sound at the right moment in a film.
I think that's it. So yeah, basically things we've all already talked about. It's just kind of fun to hear them say it. But yeah, the sound effects were the dialogue. The sound effects were everything. So big props to Ben Burtt. I mean, and like he would have been legendary enough just for designing the sounds of lightsabers, you know, in my opinion. But then you add this and it's just like clearly a genius.
All right. Thank you, Jimmy. Jacob, want to add any other stuff about the music or score?
Sure. We talk a lot about it. Thomas Newman was the composer. He is part of the dynasty of the Newmans. And then original song Down to Earth by Peter Gabriel, which features a unique group, which I wanted to kind of talk about a little bit. They're called the Soweto Gospel Choir. They're from Soweto, South Africa. And they're known for gospel, Negro spirituals, reggae, and American pop music. And their first performance was when Nelson Mandela got out of prison. And they've won 3 Grammys for Best Traditional World Music Albums in 2006, 2007, and 2018, which they added a very unique sound to that song. I thought it was a strange pick to pick an African gospel choir, but it works really well. Then, of course, they sampled songs from Hello Dolly. It Only Takes a Moment was Michael Crawford, which became famous for originating the Phantom in the Phantom of the Opera. And as well as Barbara Streisand and Hello Dolly. La Vie en Rose, written by E.F. Pilaf and then performed by Louis Armstrong. Another interesting thing is in the theatrical trailers, if I could find my notes, yeah. So in the theatrical trailers, they used At Last by Etta James and Aquarela do Brasil, which were not put in the soundtrack or the film. And then we'll go back to Grammy. They won 2 Grammy Awards for this movie. The first was for Best Song Written for a Motion Picture, and then they won for Best Instrumental Arrangement. And the orchestrators for this, including Thomas Newman, were Gary Thomas, Carl Johnson, J.A.C. Redford, and Thomas Pastiatieri. Another thing about Thomas Newman, we might have talked about this in a previous podcast, but just to just list off really fast what Thomas Newman has composed for and orchestrated: The Player, Shawshank Redemption, Cinderella Man, American Beauty, The Green Mile, In the Bedroom, Angels in America, Finding Nemo, Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events, WALL-E, of course, 1917, Skyfall, and Spectre. He is the cousin of Randy Newman. And then also 8 separate studios were used to record the full soundtrack. So pretty extensive.
8 studios, geez.
Yeah, it was, they used Fox, obviously Walt Disney, they used Warner Brothers and a bunch of other private studios, just various musicians, groups and things. Obviously the African Gospel Choir from Soweto, they did their own stuff. And so it was a lot to splice together.
Yeah, I love this music. The first time I saw it, I don't remember really thinking about the music too much. And like since then, like I was obsessed with the incredible soundtrack as a kid. And I mean, other, you know, Toy Story music is pretty well known, but I don't really remember noticing the music that much. And then when we were watching it again this week, I was like, this music is somewhere in Disneyland. Where is this music in Disneyland? It like pulls up my heartstrings. Why is it making me think of Disneyland almost more than I would even associate it with WALL-E? And it's because the part where they're like, it's basically Eve's theme. But the part when they're like dancing in the sky, basically, and WALL-E has like the fire extinguisher, is a part of the World of Color show at California Adventure. There's actually like a whole Pixar part of that show. That show's great. The music and score and the way they blend everything together in that show is great. But I was like, oh my God, yes, that's from World of Color. And man, I was listening, watching this movie this week. It's almost my new favorite soundtrack. Like, I'm obsessed with it. I want to listen to it all the time now. The music is great. And that ties in to my next section, which is in the theme parks. There is a small Wall-E section. It's small for like the bigger parts of World of Color, but there is, like I said, like a Pixar section of the World of Color show. And this part does stand out. Like, they really give a minute for you to watch Wall-E and Eve on the water and play this music. You can meet Wall-E sometimes at Hollywood Studios. I think there's like a Wall-E robot. There's no real attraction for Wall-E. But apparently in the new Star Tours, when they redid Star Tours, like, what was it, like 6 years ago or something? Wall-E can be found in G292's luggage scanner when you're waiting in the line queue. So, and you can see other little Star Wars characters in there. But when you're waiting in the line for Star Tours, you can like see a little Wall-E. Yeah, that's basically it for theme parks. So it is that time to move on to our favorite and least favorite parts of the film. So we're going to start with our least favorite sequence or part of the movie. And Jimmy, that means it's your turn. You're up. Least favorite part.
It's really hard. I like didn't think of it while I was watching it. Like, nothing stood out to me. And I kind of forgot I was supposed to pick one. So I'm like trying to think of it. One negative thought I did have as I was watching the movie was when the ship like tips over because like the wheel turns or something, and then everybody's like falling to the side. I'm like, wait, gravity? That wouldn't work that way in space. It just like took me out of it a little bit. Do you know what I'm talking about? The spaceship like tips to its side. Everyone's like, whoa! And they're falling out of their chairs and stuff. I know that's silly, but it just took me out of it. Like, the gravity wouldn't work like that. Like, it'd be artificial on the ship. Just, you know, anyway. So this is one little gripe, I guess. I try to think of anything else, but there's really nothing. I'd just be picking something. I think some of the little scenes that are supposed to be funny with the, what do you call it? The robots who are like are in disrepair. They're in there for maintenance or whatever. The mismatched toys or whatever, but the robot version there, some of those scenes I think are made more for kids, and I'm not like super enthralled by all of them. So that might be another one, but it's really hard for me to pick a least favorite.
All right, Byron, least favorite.
Man, this is hard. I really like this movie, as I've said. So if I'm forced to pick, I actually think that Otto is the weakest link. I don't really think he's as strong as the other characters. I know he's trying to preserve the ship and the video, blah, blah, blah. But the scenes with Otto kind of fall flat for me. I like the captain, and I understand the function that Otto serves for the captain, but I would have appreciated, I guess, a little more depth with Otto. Also, similar to what Jimmy said, the robots in disrepair, it's a laugh or two, but I mean, it mostly just gets them out of a jam later on when they can't face all of the sort of corporate robots that they have to get through. So those two. But yeah, you know, I think Otto, like the sort of homage to the Kubrick HAL character, is super cool. But I think he could do with one more rewrite. I'll put it that way.
All right. Cynthia, least favorite?
Well, I have to agree. I thought that the renegade robots, like when they were all running around, it was boring. I think I got up and got a glass of water or something. I didn't care about them. You know, I didn't have, and the characters didn't care about them. So in Toy Story, when Sid is blowing them up over there next door, you know, you care about them because Woody cares and all of the other characters in the bedroom. So in this movie, I had no affinity for those characters, and they turned out to be the deus ex machina at the end. You know, they came out of nowhere and saved the day. But not my favorite part.
All right. Grace, least favorite.
I'm going to go with those robots again myself. I just love this movie so much. It's hard to find a part that I dislike. probably that. And then the moment when we think that Wally might not come back when he's back to factory reset. But these are just moments I don't like because they're upsetting. They're not like bad points in the film, really. Well, the robots is just kind of boring. Yeah, it's hard for me to find a sequence I don't like. I enjoy all of it. I will say that watching it this time, it felt a little slower. I was a little less engaged overall than I was, I think, the first few times I saw it. But that's probably just where I was watching the movie. But I think if I have to pick something, I guess I'll go with when Wally's on factory reset.
All right. Brian, least favorite.
I think probably, I think that the beginning, even though I really like it, and there's some like literally incredible like cinematic moments in like that first sequence, I think that it like, for me, the movie really takes off when they go into space. Yeah.
All right. Jacob, least favorite.
I actually have something different. So with Eve's directive, right? She's looking for signs of life, something that can sustain life on Earth, right? And the moment she hears anything approaching her, she blows everything up. And it doesn't make any sense to me. Why would, if she hears some semblance of life, why would she start shooting and blasting everything? Made no sense to me. And then all of a sudden she finds a plant and everything's great, but she kept shooting at noises, which noises would be life. So I found that really strange.
That's a great point.
I don't know why I'm trying to defend it for them, but maybe it's like something to you do can't. With like CO2, oxygen, they need plants specifically to like, you know, purify the air. I don't know.
So plants can't live, right. But like some dangerous creature to the space robot is bad.
Right.
And apparently and cockroaches apparently don't count either.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Like she can't, yeah. She's the cockroach first, but that
great point
doesn't.
Yeah.
You can't judge like if a planet is viable for life by cockroaches. They can live right. through anything.
That is the point of it, the cockroach being alive, actually.
Yeah, and that's why she doesn't care about it, too, you know?
But anything that could be a threat to her would be sustained life, right? Like some big predatory whatever, I don't know. So why would she shoot it?
Other robots could be a big threat to her.
What other robots?
A Wally, anything else she might encounter.
Maybe she goes to a planet that's not
aliens.
Earth.
Aliens. Clearly, they were going to encounter aliens.
I get it. I just think that if the whole point of the robot is to investigate, shooting first before investigating is a strange thing to have in a sequence. And it's for comedy. That's the only reason why they did it, is it's comedic, and I didn't like it.
It's for comedy, but it's also to show how badass she is. You know, like they. Really, in the first few moments, we see Eva try to show us in all these different ways how amazing she is. And it stands in stark contrast to humble little Wally. I think they add like her powerfulness, that big ass gun she has, and how quick and responsive she is to add to that characterization as well as for a laugh. But you're right.
They could have had like a pile of trash falling on her and she had to shoot it so she didn't get crushed instead totally. Of what, some creature, poo. I don't know.
You're totally right.
That's my least favorite.
I think that it gives her a character arc if she starts full of herself and shooting first, asking questions later, and then ends up looking out for Wally and being more sentimental and wanting to hold hands. You know, gives us somewhere to go.
She's a badass bitch at first and then, yeah, she softens up. But
it's
also
the first time a least favorite gets like attacked. yeah, no, I still stick with it though. I think they could have done it better.
I think you make a great point.
Okay, Daniel, least favorite.
So one, there's a couple other inconsistencies. One, I think one thing that bothered me is that there's the scene where the captain is basically getting stuck in a Wikipedia loop and asking the computer, define Earth, define dancing, all this stuff, that doesn't make a lot of sense. That this captain who's been picked to be the captain of the ship, like, and how old is he? We don't know how long he's been. And in this entire life, he doesn't know what Earth is.
He doesn't know what any of this other stuff is.
I don't think that's a plot hole. I think that's intentional.
But
it's,
maybe not Earth specifically, but there's like a lot of like, I feel like he, if the information has been available, like the autopilot doesn't stop him from learning it. And he gets the concepts like super fast. Like the next
day. You don't know that though, because there was clearly new pilots coming in, and autopilot could have totally like hidden information from them when a new pilot came in or captain came in. I disagree.
Right, but he but it doesn't at the time that the captain says this stuff. It like does and this is the first time in his life that he's
yeah. But I think it needs to try to seem as in the background as possible. So I'm just saying, when a new captain came in, autopilot could have tried to keep him away from that as much as possible. And the only reason he even looked into it is because the plant showed up, which the autopilot never thought was going to happen.
And he also kept him from doing morning announcements. Like he didn't wake him. He was trying to give him less and less duties. Other than just being kind of like a figure that they have to have a human captain.
So that means that suggests the autopilot was changing somewhat. It was not just
definitely
sticking with the course, but also getting
well,
more.
No, but
more
he
severe.
Was also given the directive for the humans to not return to Earth. But I also think that yes, he evolved like Wally to take control of the ship more than the captain. Sorry, I didn't mean to like totally shut down your choice, Daniel.
but it doesn't make sense. Cause also like when Otto starts trying to shut him down and he's like, this is mutiny. So he clearly understands what mutiny is. That's not something he had to look up. So he does understand something.
I feel like learning what mutiny is more essential as a captain of a ship than knowing what Earth is at that point, I would argue.
I don't know.
What's his job as captain? To keep the ship running and keep the people alive?
I guess.
Not actually
well,
to
then,
get back to
then
Earth
I guess
anymore.
That it doesn't make sense then that they would design the ship, that they wouldn't try to take elements of Earth with them on the ship. Like, ask what a hoedown is. If they really wanted to know what a hoedown is, if it was that important, like, they would put hoedowns on the ship, right?
I see your point, Daniel, but it's been 700 years and they only eat their meals out of Slurpee cups. They have some sort of weird modern generated source of nutrition. They're not using live things to eat anymore.
It's just weird that it all happened so fast.
Do you know what a weird
700 years
party was from the year 1320? You know what I mean? Like it would be like expecting us to know things from that long ago. Plus a planet removed. That's why
But the information is still there, like in the computer. Like
the information
right.
is there. You know everything about the Middle Ages. But
And he might have known kind of what dancing is. He just like all of us do when we get, like you were saying, in a Wikipedia rabbit hole or whatever. He just wants to see examples of it. He's just trying to like just re-informing himself, maybe. Because everything to them is given to them digitally instead of like through historic archives. I don't know.
I see your point, though, Daniel.
This is the attack, the least favorite scene episode.
Sorry.
Terrible choice. And that's just the captain. Let's not get into the stuff that what the rest of the passengers know and don't know.
I guess I see
if they've
your
never
point.
Heard of Earth either, I'm assuming, but then they like seem to understand very quickly that they're all going home. Like when did they understand what's happening? Like
dirt? Like they don't know anything, yeah.
Yeah, but I guess, okay, to your point, like, okay, we're on the ship and the goal was for them to come back soon-ish, not 700 years. So they didn't set up the ship to have schools necessarily, to have all these things for everyone to have, you know, the knowledge of what, you know, it just was lost naturally because they weren't using it.
Well, they were also being like lulled into ignorance or stupidity or whatever by, I don't know, the company
autopilot. The autopilot didn't want them to know that.
The autopilot tried to hide that. It's not acting of its own, like, you know, free will to conquer. It's like programmed by the company.
Sure, but
it's it really all comes down to the company.
Because I already said.
Oh, yeah, it evolved over time. That's right.
It evolved like Wally to an extent, but it did have a directive. You're right. But I think it also evolved to a point like Wally did to be like, I'm in charge of the ship. you know, made a choice as a machine to have the captain's responsibilities to be less and less and less. Like Jacob said, let him have morning announcements. It didn't let him wake up. It was controlling the ship mostly over the captain. And I don't think they set up the ship to have the autopilot be in that much control from the get-go, but it evolved itself to then gain that control over the 700 years.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably working on it. The humans, I mean, advancing it to be more advanced and more advanced. And because, I mean... I said that like they were, I kind of sort of implied that their whole lifestyle, the sort of like glued to the screen, laying back, eating out of a cup, which is clearly sort of supposed to be despicable. I was making it sound like it was imposed upon them by the robots, but it's also true. And we just know that people sort of seek those things out. You know, it's sort of like our dream in a way to just recline and just be entertained, and like we all have this desire somewhere in us. And I think somebody made the point about COVID sort of changing our perspective on all of this a little bit. I think it was you, Kelly, and I think it really has, because prior to COVID I think that would have seemed nicer to more people, just reclining, relaxing and watching stuff all the time. Yeah, I think the people are somewhat at fault here. I mean, the past people. It's not all just the company. So I'm sort of revising my opinion, I think. It's not all the evil of the company that put these people where they are. It's something about human nature that we need to, like, sort of resist that put them where they are as well.
Wait, how do we get back on that from the Wikipedia thing? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how we got...
It's time to move on now.
Yeah,
time
most to move favorite, on. Please.
I'll just throw out there that my least favorite part was also the broken robots part. It's important to Wally having his little robot army to help him, but it drags on a little bit. Okay, favorite part, and we will start with Cynthia this time. Favorite part.
My favorite part is that love dance out in space. When Wally has the fire extinguisher propelling him around, and Eva, and it's so delightful. I cannot remember the musical underscoring at that point, but it's just beautiful and fun. And I know it is. It's like love is happening. You know, it's very, very charming. And of course, the movie has to build to that. We have to want them to be in love. And for a moment, they're safe. You know, and they can forget about everything else and just have each other. And there's also this moment, I don't think it's in the same part, but when Wally puts his head on the space between Eva's face and her body, and in her robot design, it's like an empty space and his head fits there perfectly. And I know what that's like, because there's a way that I can lay on my husband's shoulder and it's just, I fit there perfectly. It's just one of those really wonderful things about love and comfort with another person, you know. Anyways, that's where that one moment took me. Oh, that reminds me of the way I can just fit in right and perfectly with Andy, you know. So the love story was beautiful. My favorite part though is when they're dancing around in the space.
Yes, great choice. Grace, favorite part?
My favorite part is when Wally is staring at the stars and then he plays his own little comfort pre-recorded, Hello Dolly song. And then he holds his own little hand. I think is that same part. But yeah, it's just so sweet and so dear. And Cynthia was just saying, that's something I can relate to, you know, just kind of dreaming about a relationship or just about the world in general and putting on, you know, whatever the perfect little song is for yourself in that moment. Yeah, by far my favorite.
Nice. All right. Brian?
It is when you first see what humans have become and you see them as these morbidly obese blobs floating along through their spaceship drinking their lunch. Before COVID, again, as we already said, that would have been my dream, and now it's my reality, and it's amazing some days, but you know, it's tougher than I would have thought.
All right, Jacob, favorite part?
I like when Wally is attached to the reconnaissance ship, and like what Grace was saying, he gets that little glimmer of the stars amidst all the soot and pollution and smog, and he realizes he can see the fullness of space and all the stars and how beautiful that little glimmer he got before and how magnificent the full picture is. And you know, I feel that way when I, you know, visit home from LA and just no light pollution. It's just what's there, what was there before us and is going to be there after us. And I think that that's a very powerful moment. I think it also, for his character, makes him realize that he's part of something bigger than just making piles of trash.
All right, Daniel, favorite part.
This is really hard because it was hard to separate the movie into the various segments of what I mean, some of the great stuff in the movie, a lot of it is recurring. But I actually would kind of agree with Jacob. I think the sequence from like when Eve takes the plant and then goes into like hibernation mode and Wally's figuring that out through like when he leaves on the ship and Wally goes into space for the first time. Like that sequence is when the levels of visual storytelling and like needing to pay attention, like achieve a full bloom. But the scene in space with the fire extinguisher is also great. Any of the low dialogue, like pieces that require you to like pay attention to the visual cues and figure out how the story pieces fit together are also good. Like any sequence like that from the first half could probably work.
Okay, Jimmy, favorite part?
I basically agree with Daniel. My favorite aspect of this movie is the way they tell the story without dialogue, and that's really a big part of the opening. And it was like going back to my memories of the film, one of the things that struck me the most. So the opening in general, but one specific part of it would be the one that Grace already mentioned, where he's watching the clip from Hello Dolly, the romantic song, and holding his own hand and the way it's animated and the sweet nature of like the sentiment it's trying to get across. And the music is beautiful in that moment. It's just all great. And then side note, the opening, again, with the music from Hello Dolly, with the Dirty Earth that we were talking about earlier as well.
All right, Byron, favorite part.
I like when Wally is showing Eve all of his stuff because I like showing people my cool stuff. So I relate to that. And he's just so damn endearing with his little top hat and showing her the little lighter and all that. It makes me smile. And it sets him up perfectly. And it sets up her sort of infatuation with him as well. You can see why she gets him. That's my favorite.
Yeah, everyone picked great parts. My true favorite part is, when they're dancing in space. That part of the soundtrack is called Defined Dancing. That's the part in World of Color. So, like, I have that connection to World of Color, and I love Disneyland. And so that just, like, makes me feel so happy. But I also want to point out this one spot no one said is when Eve is, like, in her, like, what's the word? Like, she got the plant, so she's like not functioning. And Wally's just like taking care of her and like has his little umbrella and he's like trying to just save her. Oh my God. It's like makes me want to cry how cute that is. Okay. Next up, favorite character. And there's very few. I feel like there's two very main characters, and I just wonder which of the two everyone's going to pick. Jacob, you can go first this time.
I'm going to pick the cockroach. And I know that's silly, but it helps Wally get out of being a robot and like interacting with something that's alive and makes him come alive. And he's just this stalwart little friend. And I think without that friend, Wally would have stayed a robot and done his little duties and that's it. And I think that that's the crux of the movie, damn it. That little cockroach.
You know, that's a great choice. I do want to say real quick, I love when like Eve gets taken back from the ship and Wally's going to like chase after her and he leaves with her. And the cockroach is trying to follow him and he basically says like, no. And he does like a sit like a dog and the cockroach just like sits there. So cute. Okay. Daniel, favorite character.
Yeah. So my favorite character is going to be Mo, the cleaning robot.
Daniel, I almost made you Mo, oh, but man, I thought no one would know who Mo was.
Oh man, you should. I love because he's an unsung hero. You know, another robot who like learns to see his directive in a more complex way, just like even Wally do. And he's the one who finds the plant at the end. Man, he's able to use his powers of detecting foreign contaminants in order to discover where the plant is once it's been lost amongst the people. And I would just like to give a shout out to Mo, who very much did his part in saving the day in this movie too, with the functions that he has, because even the littlest robots still have a purpose and matter to the bigger picture. Just, and that's why Mo is my favorite character.
Like the guy from Cars. What's his name? Guido. Very similar to Guido.
Yes. All right. Jimmy, favorite character?
Wally, baby. Give me more Wally. All day, all night, all the Wally. He's so funny. He's so cool. I like Wally.
All right. Byron, favorite character?
Gotta go Mo. I mean, he's just, he's that guy, you know? Yeah. No, Wally's up there as well, but, I think Mo is, he's the bang for your buck. He does the most with the amount of screen time that he has.
All right, Cynthia, favorite character?
Jimmy, I'm jumping on your boat. Wally all the way. I think that character is so well drawn and how he captures our heart and goes through his big adventure and we love him every minute. There's not even any time where he's like a bad guy. You know, Woody can get snarky at times and some of the other characters reveal their bad side, so to speak. But Wally is just a lover all the way through. I really love that character.
All right. Grace, favorite character?
Wally for me as well. Can't beat it. Don't want to beat it. Love Wally. Can't get enough Wally.
I'm changing my answer to Wally, by the way.
Okay. Brian, favorite character?
I mean, I decided this today while I was watching it, to be honest. And for me, it's the captain, guys, because like who else has a fucking character arc? Goes from fat, blob, nasty ass to saving the fucking world, you guys. Overcoming the fucking robot ship that had overtaken the entire human race and like overthrowing it and getting its fat ass back to Earth and planting that little fucking seed. I just think that it's all exciting. And Wally.
Nice. Yes, I fucking love Wally so much. I want him to be my little friend in my house. I want to hug him when he's scared. I want to take care of him. I love him so much. And yes, I can't beat Wally. Can't beat Wally. I'm surprised no one said Eve. I also really like Eve, but Wally's better. All right. It's time. Overall thoughts and letter grades. Byron, you get to go first.
A+, graduating with honors. I would like to see this movie go to Harvard. I love this movie. Show it to everyone you know, and long may it live. A+.
All right. Next up is going to be Grace.
I'm going to go A, solid A. I want to say A+ too, but just because it didn't keep me wrapped the way it did when I was a little bit younger this go around. So I can't give it perfect score, but very much an A. Love this movie. Probably wouldn't say no to watching it ever unless I really wanted to watch something like, you know, character dialogue driven, but it's so good for the whole family and long may it reign.
All right, Cynthia.
I'm going to give this movie an A. I thought it was, you know, excellent, above average, very strong, The reason why I wouldn't put it in A plus is because I kind of fell asleep a little bit, but that might have a lot more to do with what a busy day I had. It's just a great film that needs to be seen and talked about. I've loved our deep discussion about this film today because it's easy just to kind of, oh, that's cute. But there's so much more, and that's part of the brilliance of Pixar. So they knocked it out of the park. They get an A in my book.
All right. Well said. Brian?
Solid motherfucking A. 96. Love it.
All right. Yeah. Jacob?
Solid B. 85.
Crickets.
You don't want to elaborate on the B?
I know if I elaborate, someone's going to jump on me. It's cute. I love it. It's cute. That's all
it's
I can
cute.
Say.
It's cute.
No, exactly. It honestly, I didn't want to get into this earlier because it would create arguments, but it's just slow. I found myself being like, okay, another chase scene. And so for the slowness aspects in some of those scenes, that's why I give it a B. It doesn't mean that the performances are all B. It just means overall the movie is a B for me. It's above average, but it doesn't knock it out of the park for me. And that's what it is. Sorry.
All right. Daniel?
Kelly, I assume you're looking at a spreadsheet with all of our previous grades on it. Have I given anything an A+ yet?
Yes, you gave an A+ to Finding Nemo.
Well, I need to say here, on the one hand, I'm thinking about it, and I think that like all the robot emotions in the movie is like a very inaccurate way of how AI would actually work and how robots actually work. But on the other hand, that's not actually the point of this movie. Sometimes maybe we need robots to help us understand our own emotions. No, actually, okay, since we've started this project of rewatching all the Pixar movies, that's my personal goal, is to figure out what my favorite Pixar movie is. And to be honest, I enjoyed and got more excited rewatching this movie yesterday than any of the others that we've yet revisited so far in this podcast. So A+.
All right. Jimmy.
I have a very similar opinion and rationale to Daniel. Like, just watching these movies again, I've been excited for them in different ways. Like Ratatouille was exciting because I'd never seen it. But I had certain gripes with it. And, you know, Toy Story I loved because I've loved it forever. But this movie was, like, truly a joy to watch. It's more than just, like, a joy. There are just times where I just, like, am watching a movie and I'm just like, yes, like, I'm not wasting my time. This is a beautiful work of art for many different reasons. And I just, like, I have that moment with certain movies here and there, and it has to be the right time, and I get that this movie can go slow or not be the right movie for the right time all the time, but I have to give it an A+. It's just because I think it is so well done, and when I get that spark, that feeling of like, this is a work of art and I'm not wasting my time watching it, like, this is what I ought to be spending my time doing, is watching something like this, that's an A+ feeling. So it's got to get it for that. I do see why people could perceive it to be slow at times. I mean, it's a risk they took with the limited dialogue and the robots and not many human characters. So yeah, I acknowledge that, but I still got to give it that A+ because it just gives me that spark of genius. I see genius in that movie executed so well.
I 100% agree with Jimmy and Daniel. I always liked this movie, but it wasn't one I revisited a lot. So I was excited to watch it again because it's been like probably 10 years at least since I've seen it. And I was so emotionally invested. The first few times I saw it, Jacob, I would agree that I did feel it was maybe a little slow. But I think knowing that, maybe going into it again, I totally didn't feel like it was slow. Like, I was totally enthralled in the characters, their emotional development, the message behind the film. And, you know, this is one I didn't necessarily forget this was a Pixar movie because I always liked it and I went and saw it in theaters, all that stuff. It was always in my brain. But, you know, looking back at the other movies I gave A pluses to, I gave them A pluses more out of nostalgia. But I think this is my first like true A plus of an amazingly well done made movie. It pulled at my heartstrings. Like, that's such a phrase, but like, I don't know any, I can't think of anything else off of the top of my head. Maybe unless I went into some like deep other like classical pieces of music that like literally this movie and the music from it literally tug at my heartstrings. Like, I don't know what else to say about that. It's so well made. I'm so emotionally invested in it. I love WALL-E, and this is up there now on my top Pixar movies for sure. So A plus for me. A plus for me. All right. Well, there you have it. I think this is the movie that's gotten the most A pluses so far. It has one more A plus than Finding Nemo did. So this movie beat Finding Nemo. Actually, Finding Nemo had no B's, though. This got one B from Jacob, but it got the most A pluses. So there you have it. I think the jury is in that this is a great movie. And if you haven't seen WALL-E, I highly suggest you guys all go watch it. All right. So that's it. Episode 9 in the books. Next up will be Up. Next up will be Up. And Up is great. And I'm excited to watch that one again, too, and talk about it.
Yeah, same.
Thanks for listening. Let us know what you think. Subscribe and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Instagram. And next time we'll talk about Up. Thanks for coming, and we'll see you next time. Friday Forum Podcast is a JK Entertainment production. All thoughts and opinions by the participants are theirs and theirs alone. Original theme music by Jimmy Anthony. Please subscribe so you never miss an episode, and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Feel free to follow us on Instagram at Friday Forum Podcast for updates about future episodes. And please email us at FridayForumPodcast@gmail.com to contact us and let us know what you think. I'm your host, Kelly Anthony. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.